What's up, people? You are now tuned in to Wrestle Extra, hosted by Black Wrestling Alliance, your one-stop shop for all things black wrestling. You can also catch myself, Mex, the WrestleManiac, on the show alongside the Professor Gerard Bonner. Enjoy.
Yo, this is Wrestle Extra. I'm your boy, A Dazzle, the Black Wrestling Advocate. Always joined by my trio's team, the Real House of Black, Mex, the WrestleManiac, if you will. Yeah, and of course, yeah, the omnipresent man of knowledge that is the Professor Gerard Bonner. Guys, let me just say this real quick. If you see me wiping my eyes, it's not because I'm a Cody crybaby. I'm not. I'm putting out there now. I had a bit of an issue with my eye today, so like weeping and stuff. But yeah, I'm not a Cody crybaby. I'm just like,
that's so funny. Oh my god!
Just putting it out there. Speaking of these Cody crybabies. Gerard said it just before we came on air. It feels as though it was like 2 weeks ago, but it happened less than a week ago. Mm-hmm. The slap that was heard around the world, I can still kind of hear the reverberations happening as we speak. When The Rock slapped Cody Rhodes at the WrestleMania kickoff press event in Las Vegas on Thursday. We've spoken about this, Gerard, on WWT Live. So I'll go to Mex first with this one. I'm sure he's mentioned it somewhere in the many places that he finds himself as well. But what are your thoughts when that happened? How did you feel? What was going on? And how do you feel now? And how does it feel? How does the road to WrestleMania feel for you at the moment?
Yeah, firstly, that press conference was incredible. Like, I just don't feel like WWE have done anything like that. It felt very pro wrestling. It felt very stuff we've come to see in AEW, like just egos going at it, talking over each other, kind of unprofessional in a sense. Everyone trying to be like, you know, show their machismo, if you like. You know, I love Triple H in the back speaking to Kathy Kelly afterwards. I think it was saying that, you know, four men, egos, they've got into business for themselves and using all that kind of insider terms sort of thing. I just felt it was brilliant. And the Roman Reigns and Seth Rollins, like, the dynamic there, it was just like we're trying to get Seth Rollins over, and Seth Rollins first thing comes out and calls Roman Reigns big bro, and I'm just like, oh, bro, you're not helping yourself here, are you? You know, he is big bro, but yeah, you don't have to say it, but yeah. And then, you know, Roman deciding that I'm going to choose who my opponent is, you know, to hell with the Royal Rumble and how that, you know, manifests the main event, I'll choose. And obviously he chose The Rock, the showing the family tree, which I thought was brilliant. Like, because all of a sudden, for me, for many others, this isn't just The Rock doing a cameo run anymore. This is meaningful. He has layers. Like, he is now very much in the fabric of what this entire story is going to be about. Cody comes out, hushes these two, and this pre-agreement they have about the whole box office of it all and big money match and all of that kind of stuff. He finally claims, you know, what's his, and The Rock with the slap heard around the world, and, you know, these men jumping in and going at it. Like, I just thought it was just really, really good. A very unique way to sell a match that we don't see often. And it was just very exciting to see that these guys' plan, at least right now, has been scuppered. And I say right now, when Triple H came out on SmackDown and said, yes, the main event is Cody versus Roman. If you guys didn't catch that, that is the main event. We're still, what, 7 weeks out for Mania?
Right.
Like, so much can still happen. So much can still change. Although, yes, Triple H has said it. Like, to be honest, it means nothing at this point. Because your boss above you, The Rock, can still come in here and do something absolutely crazy. I had a special guest on my podcast during the week, and he said that he reckons on SmackDown this week, The Rock is going to ban Triple H, suspend him.
Wow.
That's my reaction, it's very possible. All right, I told you to fix this. You haven't fixed this. At the end of the day, you answer to me. you're gone. Mm-hmm. For now, you're gone. You're out of here. Mm. And it's like, oh my gosh. Mm. Like, and from all the stuff we've seen in the dirt sheet in the last 24, 48 hours, The Rock is ready to be a heel. He's ready to, you know, show shades of Hollywood Rock. So, listen, I'm happy I didn't jump to conclusions and, you know, I didn't become a Cody crybaby and stuff.
Sure.
I was bamboozled. I just didn't know what to think. But I just thought, we're still too early. It's still too far from Mania for this to be the end result. So I'm happy my faith and my patience was somewhat, you know, I was rewarded for that. And you might change again, but so far so good. It's brilliant.
You know, as you said, there are still 7 weeks to go. So many things can happen. And there have been so many people that have said they've watched that whole thing that happened on Thursday and even after Friday, because on SmackDown, more or less nothing happened. There was no kind of like continuation of what happened on Thursday. So we're still drawing conclusions really from what happened on Thursday. And just the simple fact that The Rock and Roman Reigns are going to be there, you know, on this Friday. And like I said, so many people have said they've come away from Thursday's press event with more questions than before. But I think in the best way possible, you know, whereas before it was kind of like this whole, what the hell does it mean? Why did Cody give up his spot? And why do you want The Rock? And then we had, you know, obviously the whole reason for the Cody crybabies, Cody needs to finish his story and all the rest of it. But then we're like, right, this happened. Okay, now that happened. Now we've got the match, but yet The Rock's still winning. Do we? I mean, for me, yes, we do. The only thing that could, and there are two scenarios for me that could happen, maybe three. Two scenarios for me that could happen. We get a triple threat match, or either Cody or Roman Reigns are doing two nights in a row. That's it for me. I can't see anything other in terms of WrestleMania itself, other than those two things. I can't see anything else. And I said this on WWT as well, on Friday. You know, there's still a strong possibility that The Rock isn't going to fight at all. Like, he doesn't actually have to. There's nothing to say that he has to. It's not been set in stone. There's nothing there. And he could have done all of this literally just to build up WrestleMania. And he would have still done it. And he's still done his job. Because that, at the end of the day, that's what it's about. It's about getting bums on seats. And he may not get in, you know, he may not actually have a match. Maybe he'll be involved. Maybe he gets involved. Maybe he causes someone to lose in some way, whether it be Roman, whether it be Cody. Maybe he has some kind of match in between somewhere. Seth Rollins gets involved. Like, there are still so many things that can happen. And it's exciting. And I'm glad as well that I said what I said last week. These people know what they're doing, and they had this story and all these actions in place ages ago. And I don't even think the fact that CM Punk got injured has a lot to do with it either, because CM Punk was never really in this mix. For me, the only part that's probably changed a little bit is Seth Rollins maybe getting involved. Like, the whole CM Punk thing, I don't think it actually makes a difference to what this is or what was going to be, because he was never part of this. You know what I mean? So these people have got it in the bag.
I think what's been good to see is that the dirt sheets haven't necessarily got hold of this. Like, there's been a load of stories as to what's happening, what's not happening, blah, blah, blah. What was in The Rock's contract, what he signed for TKO and all this kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, the press conference and where they were going from there, like, nobody got it right. It seems like between the four men involved, maybe a Paul Heyman, Triple H, one writer or so, maybe there's like literally less than 10 people know what is going on within this story. And that's what made it so enjoyable in terms of playing out. No one on the outside like had an inkling of what's going to happen. Now, I want to think they were going to do the right thing always and go with Reigns versus Cody. I don't know if they really wanted to do Roman versus Rock this year and they heard the reaction and thought, let's change, or let's, apparently some things I've seen now is you know, we wanted to make Cody Rhodes into this massive Bryan Danielson type figure, but he was already over. So like, why would you want to kind of do more sort of thing, like, and potentially lose people, which they could have done with this risk they took. The stuff that happened on SmackDown as to Rhodes, you know, saying, I don't want the WrestleMania match, I'll get you another time. It hasn't been addressed. But I guess the way they went has been so good, no one's like nitpicking on that. Mm-hmm. But he hasn't went back, and even today, you know, last night on Raw, there was no kind of explanation as to where I once was. He said that obviously it was the crowd that made him come round, sort of thing. But you know, so it's difficult to see, is it a Punk thing, or was this the plan all along, or was Roman and Rock, is it meant to happen, but like at WrestleMania 41, like it's for once, like, just I'm just tuning in every week and just give me what I'm taking. Like, I'll worry about these questions and answers later, because right now it's good enough, sort of thing. But yeah,
it's crazy. Gerard, give us your thoughts on this whole madness.
There's so much to unpack here. First of all, I think, again, them choosing Vegas during Super Bowl week and all of the things was absolutely brilliant. I think one of the things that we're seeing here is this is what the TKO impact is all about. Mm-hmm. It is because this felt more like a UFC press conference than it did a WWE press conference. The UFC press conferences are used to having arenas full of people with really no media asking questions and just all of the big things happening on the stage. The look of this, the feel of this was all very UFC-ish, which we love. Triple H said something that I thought was so profound in his portion of this at the top. And he said it only one statement. And it said volumes, and that is, this is a brand new WWE. That took care of the Vince McMahon stuff. That took care of everything you thought you knew, because you really have no idea at this point, because they are now opening up the floodgates in terms of what can actually happen here. I mean, think about it. We saw them using expletives on the stage. They never did that. And we've never seen The Rock do that in WWE. Not even when he, you know, started turning into The Rock in the Nation of Domination. He never used those kinds of things. It was just so expertly done. And I mean, when you start talking about 200 million social impressions on something like this, that's all you need to worry about. This trended for a week. TMZ was talking about it like crazy. I mean, we've got a thing on our hands. And in terms of what can happen, remember this, The Rock has no problem playing the long game.
Mm-hmm.
Go back to WrestleMania 27, where he ends up being the special host of WrestleMania here in Atlanta. And it's a main event of it's The Miz versus John Cena. And in the middle of that, The Rock interjects, allows The Miz to win, starts this program with John Cena when he turns up on Raw the next night to say, I challenge you. We're all thinking it's going to be Backlash, maybe SummerSlam. He goes, the main event of WrestleMania 28. And we all went, what? We got to wait a year for this? And then we ended up getting it for 28 and 29. The Rock was willing to play the long game. And so if they've got to play the long game to get us to Rock Roman at 41, which I'm hearing is being rumored to be in Vegas, right? Hello, guys. Remember, Rock said that he was only coming back if they could do something that's unprecedented.
Right.
And you know, when we were on WWT yesterday, I had to almost fight with the people in the chat because I need people to get to see the bigger picture. Everybody's talking about, well, we wouldn't have this problem if Rock did this last year. Let me help you with something. This wouldn't hit the same if Rock did it last year. Right. Last year, we would have just had our satisfaction. Oh, great. Rock is in Hollywood. There's no TKO involved. There's no Rock on the board. There's no Triple H in charge. There's no Vince McMahon completely out of the company. So all of those factors make all of this hit differently. And for all that we thought we knew, none of us ever thought we'd see Rock and Roman on the same side.
Jeez.
That's a different thing. And it is Rock the megastar who's never been booed. Now, we had Hollywood Rock. And as big as Hollywood Rock was, he's not as big as The Rock is now. So for this version of The Rock to be booed with all the power and all the chips, guys, we're looking at somebody who made the tribal chief look like a little brother. All right. The optics of it alone, you know, The Rock is standing there like defending his family. Wait, The Rock defend you? No. So there are so many elements here that are interesting. And then if you look at Raw last night with Seth Rollins now talking about you need somebody in your corner and you need somebody to help you and I'll be a shield for you. Like this is getting wild. And to your point, we still have a good 7 weeks. We still have an elimination chamber to get through. I think we're going to see, and it's the 40th anniversary of Mania, we're going to see something unprecedented. So I don't know if there are any tickets left to WrestleMania. If there are, you might want to get there. All the people that said that they were going to sell their tickets last week probably feel really silly.
Right.
And right now, I'm always invested into the road to WrestleMania. But right now, this is arguably the greatest road to WrestleMania we've ever seen. And we're still 7 weeks out.
I think the most recent time I can think of where I felt this excited for WrestleMania was when I realized we were going to get Bianca versus Sasha Banks. And then before that,
Kofi Mania.
And even with Kofi, I was not invested when people started the whole Kofi Mania thing. I wasn't. Mm-hmm. I was like, but then about two, maybe 3 weeks before, I'm like, this is actually going to happen, isn't it?
Right.
So I was like, okay, cool.
Yeah.
As you mentioned, you know, this whole optic of The Rock making Roman Reigns, the guy who's been the most dominant guy in WWE for the last 3 years, no one can beat him. The likes of a Sheamus, Brock, you know, whoever else has come across, not being able to beat him at all, but yet The Rock comes along and, you know, as you said before, Gerard, the other day, you know, the Roman Reigns is there like, yeah, what he said.
Right.
Kind of thing. Right. Just in the background, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Just holding back. After giving the big speech of, I'm going to do this and I'm making the choice, I'm choosing The Rock, then The Rock comes out. It's like, okay, all right, you talk. I'll stay
right
here.
Kind of
thing.
Right.
It's crazy. It's crazy. Incredible. Incredible. With all of that said, Thursday happened. And I got overexcited about SmackDown on Friday, expecting to see Rock, Roman, or Cody. We saw neither of them at all. But yet at the same time, I think it was one of the best SmackDowns we've had in a long time because we addressed this whole thing with Elimination Chamber. They chose 12 guys to face each other in qualifying matches to choose the 6 guys who are going into the Elimination Chamber in Perth. The one thing that I did was made predictions as we were going along, thinking, all right, this person's going in, this person's going in. Obviously, we found out that Randy Orton and Drew McIntyre were going in. We knew what the other matches were going to be. And one of them was Bronson Reed versus Bobby Lashley. I predicted straight away, with Bronson Reed being Australian, it being in Australia, with Bobby Lashley having all the stuff that's going on, Bobby Lashley was going to lose. And it's going to be Bronson Reed that goes into the Elimination Chamber match. Lo and behold, on Raw yesterday, Bobby Lashley gets the win. Is it just me or is anyone else shocked that like he's actually in this match?
Yeah.
Was anyone else expecting it?
I didn't expect him to win and qualify. I thought it would definitely be Bronson Reed, especially because of the ties to Australia. I don't know why you wouldn't just do that. Not to say Bobby should take a loss. Not that I think that's a shame for Bronson Reed. At the end of the day, neither man is winning. Neither man is going to win.
Oh, no, no. Neither of them are winning.
I feel like give the guy, you know, the countryman a goal. And I don't know if it'd be something else for him to get involved in if they go over there. But maybe this is them beginning to take this faction seriously in some way. Maybe it's just to feed another story. I wouldn't be surprised if something happens like Karrion Kross comes through the ground of the chamber and pulls out fuels whatever these two teams are doing. I was a bit upset, is that the word, for Bronson Reed. I thought it would have been nice, but yeah, they've went with Bobby Lashley, so it's good for Bobby, but unless he's gonna win it at this point, I just don't really I don't know.
So I've heard since last night's episode of Raw, there's a possibility. So it was announced in August of last year. I found out that in August of last year, Bronson Reed announced that his girlfriend or longtime girlfriend or wife is expecting. Fast forward a few months, whatever else, it's around about this time that she should be expecting. So I think it's a lot to do with that. Why he that probably sense. Isn't going. That now makes sense to me. But I must say, in one way, it was kind of a shame that we didn't use this also as well as a chance for the whole Bobby Lashley faction. We still need a name, for goodness sake. And Final Testament to kind of have something else to kind of further their story a little bit, maybe. That's another reason why I expected Lashley to lose. AOP would get involved, Karrion Kross would come out of nowhere, something like that, cost him the match or something like that. So I'd actually be surprised if they get involved in Elimination Chamber, because I feel as though there are bigger stars within the match who probably should have something like that. Because I think LA Knight qualified yesterday. Mm-hmm. I'm now expecting AJ Styles to come in and cost LA Knight the match, Elimination Chamber itself. Mm. LA Knight gets close, AJ Styles comes out. That's them now for WrestleMania maybe. So I was quite surprised by that. Talking of Elimination Chamber, I'll talk about this and then we'll move on to the whole thing with Big Business. It so happened on WWE.com that I think when someone went to the page for Elimination Chamber for the women's one, there was this image that was blurred out quite a bit, but it was quite obvious. You had six ladies in the picture with the Elimination Chamber structure and all the rest of it. So it gave you an idea of who's supposed to be in this match. We already know Bianca's going, Becky's going. And before Raw came on, this happened over the weekend before yesterday's episode of Raw. We saw Tiffany Stratton's face. Who else was there? So there's Bianca, Becky, Tiffany Stratton. Who qualified yesterday again? Liv Morgan. Yep. Naomi and Jade Cargill. I don't know how many people noticed this. I don't know if people are talking. And I started to wonder, how are we getting Jade in the Elimination Chamber? There's a battle royal, as mentioned yesterday on Raw. There's a battle royal for a chance. And then I think Naomi's got a match on SmackDown.
Yes.
Correct.
Yes.
Do we think that Jade is going to turn up in this battle royal and win and then end up going to Elimination Chamber, Gerard?
I hope not.
Why?
Here's why. Right now, first of all, I don't want them to rush Jade Cargill. Mm-hmm. And here's what I mean by that. She's proven star power, right? I mean, here it is. She was involved in a commercial during the Super Bowl, which 125 million watched, the most watched Super Bowl of all time. Mm-hmm. And so they obviously saw her. She's a star. No doubt that she's a star. I don't want them to rush to get her into a WrestleMania situation with Bianca too soon. Not for this WrestleMania. And my concern is, Royal Rumble is one thing, and her placement in the Rumble was great. Mm-hmm. Putting her in the Elimination Chamber for a potential shot at the World Championship this soon in her career is a mistake. It's a mistake. I think we've not seen anything. Should she be at some point considered? Yes. I mean, she was last three in the Rumble.
Mm-hmm.
But we've yet to see her in a one-on-one match in WWE.
Mm.
So how do you go from one appearance to all of a sudden being in the Elimination Chamber? Because here's the thing with the Elimination Chamber for everybody who's going in there right now, men and women, we have to be able to see you potentially on a WrestleMania stage against that person. Would we at some point like to see Jade Cargill against Rhea Ripley? Absolutely. Is that a WrestleMania caliber match? Absolutely. Is it a WrestleMania caliber match March or April of 2024? Not yet. Here's my other thing. I don't want to see her take a crazy L right now, because I think all eyes are pointing toward potentially Becky winning this thing. You know, obviously having Bianca in there is great star power. If Naomi makes it, that's great star power. Like, I love the fact that all of them would be in there. I want to see Jade accomplish some other things to build her star even more as a presence in the ring. I think she's already made outside of the ring. The Super Bowl commercials, to me, prove that. You know, but for me, I don't want her in this match right now. I would rather have her show up at Stand and Deliver and dominate. I'd even rather have her, if you're going to have a WrestleMania Women's Battle Royal, have her show up there and win that and let that jumpstart some things. But I don't want her in this match right now. I think it's just too soon.
Why do you think a Women's Battle Royal, the Andre the Giant one or whatever it is now, the women's one, is better for her than the Elimination Chamber? To do what you want it to be,
because I think we're still built. We still have a group of fans in WWE that don't know who Jade Cargill is. Not just that, but I don't think that to that group of fans, her undefeated streak in AEW means anything. So I want her star to continue to rise as this mammoth, unbelievable, unbeatable presence. I think the Elimination Chamber, given again the star power, given again what we know in terms of story, it doesn't look favorable for her to come out of there with the win. You know, there are only a handful of scenarios in an Elimination Chamber where we go, the win was you getting in. Last year's Montez Ford is an example of that, right? A couple of years ago when Kofi was in and he was fighting for the world title and he almost got to the end. That was good enough, right? But for a Jade Cargill, with all that they've done and all the red carpet that they've rolled out, if she gets in this Elimination Chamber and loses, and I mean even if she gets to the last person and loses, it doesn't hit the same. Because now you've given her a loss and she's not even had a one-on-one match yet.
True.
That's what I'm saying. True. Is let her build her story in the WWE as this person who's unbeatable. She's fought all these people and she's won. And now we put her in the Elimination Chamber, as opposed to putting her in there right off the bat. I call it the Scott Steiner issue. When Scott Steiner came into WWE and the first thing you did gave him was a world title match. When he lost, he never got to those heights again. I don't want that to happen to Jade Cargill.
Fair enough. My thought was, when I first saw this blurred picture, obviously they were doing qualifying matches and stuff like that. I thought we were going to get a one-on-one scenario, a first debut, a first one-on-one singles match in the WWE. Mex, do you think that probably would have been a better way to go if we are getting this Battle Royal and she qualifies that way?
For who? Trinity?
For Jade. For
Naomi? Oh, for Jade. I think it's just too delicate. I tend to agree with Gerard. Like, I just think, like, we can't throw her in just yet, especially without end result. Like, if she's going to go through a singles match, win it. She's going to go to the Elimination Chamber right now, she probably has to win it and then go on to the title. Like, I just feel like we don't need to rush it. I think we said this after the Rumble. We're not starving for female talent on this roster right now. They're handling her is very, very good. You know, we still remember her. She popped up after the Rumbles, having those conversations about, you know, where am I going to land? Other people are getting contracts, sort of thing. Maybe they do something like that, if that graphic that you referred to of her going to the Elimination Chamber, which I saw as well, if they're going to do that as well, like put her into these qualifying things, they're going to have to kind of do something there. Or maybe it's the Battle Royal. And again, the Battle Royal will protect her, but it's just like, how many Battle Royal type situations are you going to put her in before we need to actually see? And, you know, for us, you know, me, you, Gerard, we know what she's about, what she has in her locker. A lot of people are still to buy into her. Right, she's presented like a star, but what can she actually do in the ring? Like, is she a Bianca Belair? Is she a Charlotte Flair? Like, there will be people out there that need those questions answered. So, yeah, I just think that unless we're ready to go and this is going to be the beginning of the run, like, I don't think we can necessarily just be popping her in there here and she's just losing, even if it's final four, last person. Like, yeah, you don't want her to come across as like some, I'm gonna say like a Sami Zayn type nearly character, you know.
Right.
When she lands, she needs to land and be ready to go from there, sort of thing. Almost like Solo when they first started using Solo.
Right.
Yeah. Solo's on a flipping 4-month losing streak right now, but
the Cena effect. I have an interesting question, because as we were talking about her and potentially a battle royal, how would you guys feel about her debut match happening at Mania
against
depends on who it is.
If we could make the argument against Nia Jax,
that for me would be the only match that would make sense. Because I wouldn't want it to be a champion.
Right.
Rhea Ripley would be phenomenal. But she's champion. I don't want to see her anywhere near Bianca Belair anytime soon. Nope.
I don't want to see her near Naomi either.
Yeah, that as well. I definitely don't want her to be on SmackDown. For me, Nia Jax is the only one that makes sense, that kind of ticks enough boxes to make any sense. Anything other than that, let's not do Jade at WrestleMania, unless she's just interfering in a match or something, maybe. But apart from that, no, not at all. Another question I was going to ask with all of this as well. We saw Tiffany Stratton was one of the blurred faces. And I would imagine there's less of an objection for Tiffany Stratton to be in the match. What are the different factors when it comes to Tiffany Stratton being in a match and Jade Cargill being in the match?
Tiffany's ready, man. Tiffany's ready, man.
Tell me why.
That girl is so ready. Like, the character has nailed down the character. We know the character down to a T. The crowd is aware of the character. The in-ring is polished. It's ready to go. These things, there's no... You know, okay, there's room for error, there's risk with everything, but with Tiffany, there's almost, you know, it's like a 1-5% that this is not going to work for whatever reason. Like, she already in the segment they debuted her in with the contract situation, like, she looked more dominant than Naomi, who's been in the WWE, that just came out with the contract, smiling and all the girls, hey, and Trinity just came out like, I've got one too. Blah, 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 picked a fight with Meechin. Like, I just think the character and stuff is so refined. I think there is something in the fact that they've had her from, like, day one through the Neil program or whatever. Like, I think she was before the Neil program, but yeah.
No,
She's Neil program.
She's Neil. Okay, cool.
Yeah.
So they had her from there. They've brought her up in their likeness. And like they've already said with Jade, as much as they are clearly very invested in Jade, like, they made a point to say like her pre-existing teaching was rubbish, basically, and they've had to start again, sort of thing. And because of the way they've debuted Jade and rolled out Jade, and we're seeing her in more mainstream places than wrestling on the wrestling product right now, it's almost like we don't have any room to fail with this one. We need to get this right so people buy in from day one. otherwise, you know, I'm trying to think of like people that have come and been, Gable Steveson. You don't want a Gable Steveson. You don't want a Gable Steveson that is like a high profile person on the outside, sir. But one day come into the ring, it's just like, I just think Tiffany is very ready. She's went through the regime, she's went through everything. She's a good character, she really is. So yeah, there's less room for error.
Yeah. Oh no, for sure. I asked that question on purpose in order, you know, for viewers and whoever listen to kind of also then understand the points that Gerald was making about Jade as well. Like this whole thing of not rushing it, and it needs to be right, it needs to be done correctly, give her time, all that kind of stuff. And for me, Tiffany Stratton kind of also being in this mix of the women's elimination chamber match, gives a perfect contrast to a new star, but a new star who is ready to be put in that position, as opposed to Jade. You know, Tiffany Stratton, I think, is as polished can get when it comes to a new star. She even came out, her first match was the main event. And it wasn't even like it was against main event caliber opponent, and not to discredit Mi Chin, but she's not, you know, we wouldn't put her in that category because she's not a multiple time champion as a Bianca Belair or a, you know, or a Bayley or Bianca, you know, or Rhea, whoever it is. But yet she was still put in that position and shined in the best way possible. So it's going to be interesting. Still talking about our ladies, but of course, let's talk about this thing called Big Business. One lady that we know who is an absolute star and, you know, had Tony Khan making announcements and special events just for her to debut, is the expected. I think we're expecting it 95%, maybe higher than that, but it's not 100% sure because no one's actually said it yet. So, but, you know, we've seen Big Business. Mercedes Moné is going to come out at some point. It's in her hometown of Boston. Even on the graphic you see in the corner, it says the word boss, but with a B-O, double dollar sign, T-O-N. Of course, you know, very, very, very much implying money. Which Mercedes is. Gerard, my first question is, have they done this correctly in the way that they've done it? Because it feels quite obvious it's going to be Mercedes. Should they have done it a different way? You know, the whole Tony Khan announcement kind of gets us rolling our eyes before it happens anyway. So right. Was this the best way for them to do this?
To be honest with you, I struggle with this one. In terms of, to answer your question, I struggle with how this was announced. And I think in this environment of wrestling in 2024, surprises always win the game. And I know some would say, well, oh man, if you weren't watching and then you got the surprise, you missed the potential ratings. And if they promote this and all of these other things, you know, can you get this massive rating for this moment? To me, this reminds me of why I don't like spoilers on social media. Because if there's a spoiler on social media, then I know what to expect when I turn on my television. And the whole idea of watching wrestling is not knowing what to expect. It is the surprise element. Think about this. Think about when Sting debuted in AEW. There was no warning. There were no tea leaves dropped. No red herrings, no nothing. Literally, the place went dark, and then we started seeing snow for winter is coming, and it's Sting. And people lost their stuff. So I think in this environment, now, I actually understand why AEW did it. I think AEW feels like we need to have conversation happening about us. And since all the wrestling conversation has been about WWE, whether it was, you know, what happened at the Rumble or Cody not choosing Roman or trending for 5 days straight, we want Cody. Or then this press, it's like WWE just keeps, they're like Missy Elliott in the 90s, right? Like everywhere they turned, Missy was there, you know, and you couldn't escape it because she was on a hot track. That's WWE right now. They're on a hot track every time you every station you turn on, it's WWE. So AEW is figuring out, how do I get on the radar? Well, let's talk about Mercedes Moné without talking about her. Strangely enough, they did a similar thing with CM Punk when they had the debut of Rampage, you know, or was it? Yeah, it was
Collision.
Rampage. Collision. Well, it would happen twice.
Oh, yeah.
When he first got signed, it wasn't the debut of Rampage, but they did an episode of Rampage in Chicago. And, you know, they kind of promoted this at this big thing where everybody knew that's what it was, his initial debut. And then the debut of Collision when he came back. I think for them, and this also speaks to what these companies deem to be important. I think WWE knows if we create a moment on our television screen, it's going to become a social moment. And if it becomes a social moment, we can get a whole lot out of that. AEW right now is like, we need a rating. They're not thinking about a social moment. They're thinking about a rating. I think that's why they did this way. Will it impact things? Well, it looks like it's already impacting the numbers for Boston Garden. I've heard that they initially had it walled off for like 5,900 people, but they sold 4,500 tickets in the first day. Like, you know, and that's because of Mercedes Moné. We saw in New Japan that she knows how to move the needle. She knows how to sell tickets. And since it's the first time that people can see her in the States since May of last year, yeah, they're going to buy tickets. Which is a good thing for AEW. So personally, I didn't like the rollout. I think the social currency is worth more than a TV rating. But for them, the TV rating is more important than the socials. So they're going after the TV rating.
And I think that makes sense as well, because, you know, as you say that, I'm like, you know what? It actually makes sense, because with WWE, it's about generating money more than it is generating TV sales, because they've kind of already established themselves in that way. Yes, they're going to still, you know, look for a bigger, bigger deal, and, you know, they've grabbed this $5 billion deal with Netflix and whatnot, but they've kind of already done that. Whereas for them now, the next step is growing the business. So if social media is the thing, and then on top of that, like with Super Bowl that happened on Sunday, I can only imagine how much it must have cost for each of those commercials to be put on that night. So WWE are going down that route. So if we get social moments, blah, 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 we get bigger advertising and bigger partnerships in that respect. Whereas AEW are trying to secure TV deals at the moment. So their thing is to get faces watching or turning on the station when the show comes on. So that definitely makes sense. And but I'm also with you, Gerard, in terms of on a personal level, I would definitely rather have the surprise element than kind of have an understanding of what's about to happen. But in saying all of that, I understand exactly why they've done it like this. And I don't necessarily think they've done it wrong either.
I think it's right for them.
Yeah.
Firstly, I would kind of congratulate Mercedes on getting the same rollout as CM Punk. That's massive for any wrestler, let alone a female wrestler to kind of get, you know, negotiate that for herself. A whole show, your kind of branding, named, you know, whatever you know, they might have to help decide the name or whatever the case is, but, you know, it's associated with her, whatever the case is. I think it's massive for her. I don't mind that this is the way they're doing it. Although I hear you guys' points completely, I would probably go one step further. And if I was Tony Khan, I would have just said Mercedes Moné is turning up on March 13th.
Right.
You
might as well have.
Right.
Because
right.
I'm looking at specific. Yeah. It's not a secret. The double S in the Boston was that was it. Like, hello, there you go.
Dead giveaway.
Just put her on, gonna buy on a flight.
Yeah, like I think I was reading that before that show had done, like, you know, before the announcement had sold like 1,000 tickets or something. With the announcement, I think it was back end of last week, they were up to like 6,000 in total or 5,000 in total. It's going to do more. It'll do more. TD Gardens can do about 17,000, 18,000, I believe. But why wouldn't you just say Mercedes is coming? This is where she's going to show up, because AEW are having a hard time selling tickets right now. So I don't think there's really need for the kind of cloak and dagger and hiding and you know, the hints and stuff. You know who it is. We have a very strong idea of who it is. Say who it is, so you can go relentless for the next, you know, month promoting Mercedes Moné is showing up here, sort of thing. And you know, I think you can kind of look towards getting back to usual ticket sales, because that's been the talk of the town, really. As a fan of, you know, that watches it at home on TV, like, it doesn't necessarily concern me how many tickets or how many people are in the building. But, you know, for them, if they're saying that, you know, they've been selling 2,500 tickets to shows and buildings that can take 15,000, it's not great. You had a chance here to really say, bang, this person's coming, everyone buy a ticket. But they went about it the cautious way, which I'm fine with, but I think it's just a missed opportunity.
Let me piggyback off of that, because I also think it's interesting that they chose not to say Mercedes Moné, but literally 4 months or 5 months before he could even come to the company, they told us in November that Will Ospreay's coming, right? Yeah. So, like, to me, again, this goes back to what I was saying in terms of them being in the conversation, because they led off with that saying, and a major star is signing, you know, at this particular pay-per-view. I forgot the name of the November pay-per-view, but whoever it was, Full Gear. So they made a big deal about that. And he wasn't even done with his New Japan deal. Like, he just finished the New Japan deal this weekend. So to your point, Mex, you know, thinking about what is it that we need right now, if we need to be able to get more tickets to sell so that we can figure out where our TV home is going to be and so that we can cook ratings, go ahead and tell. I mean, you told us that Sting's last match is going to be Revolution. Mm-hmm. So that you could sell those Revolution tickets. Mm-hmm. So if that's going to be the case, tell us, because your fan base is the smart fan, right? They're the ones who are on the internet. They're the same people who heard the rumor about Chris Jericho early that day. And by that evening, they were mad and, you know, chanting crazy things and all the things. If you know that's your fan base, then the clues that you're leaving are unnecessary. You know, like, just say, hey, Mercedes is coming, because that would have gotten more traction than, okay, big business. Is it Mercedes? Is it not? And here's the crazy thought. I'm not going to say it's not Mercedes, but what if it's the Rainmaker?
I've seen someone.
The money thing would make sense. You could do both of them.
Yeah.
It could be all of them. It could be Will as well.
Well, yeah, I mean, true.
It could be all of them, because think about it. They're going to need something big, because I mentioned Sting's retirement. That's 10 days before this event. So you got Revolution happening March 3rd. Then you've got that following week. And then after that is this big business, which, again, you know, it's weird because they usually don't crown those kinds of events on a Wednesday, you know, with that much fanfare to where it's almost like its own pay-per-view. So I think this is also growing pains. This is also growing pains for AEW in figuring out what's the right thing to do. Should we announce it? Should we not? My hope is that it sells out. I legit want there to be 18,000 people in that arena. I want it to be the biggest dynamite they've ever had. Yes.
Mm-hmm. I've just looked. So currently, the setup is set up right now for 6,800. So obviously there's space they cordon off for production reasons and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. But you know, they could open
that's
up
a lot of space.
That's a lot of space they've cordoned off right there, right?
Yeah, so yeah, that's half of it.
Exactly. Least. So currently set up for 6,800. There's been about 5,600 tickets sold. So there's a remaining available tickets currently of 1,200 or so. Now, of course, they could always open up more space, but right now it's going to do better than, you know, the shows they've been having in terms of attendance. Mm-hmm. And of course, you're promoting it heavily, but, like, yeah, it's still not groundbreaking enough, but it comes back to, you know, this social currency of what we're saying. Like, they want to be the guys that, you know, they've got all the big signings now. Like, cool, well done. Like, brilliant. And I want to see every single one of them, but it's like, now you need to do the other stuff. You need to book them. You need to make it interesting. You need to get 6,000 people in the place next week and the week after that, and then head to 10,000 people. Like, it's, you know, and I just, yeah, like I said, I just feel like it's kind of a missed opportunity here.
I think for me, I was going to say, I think for me as well, we were mentioning the whole thing with Will Ospreay, had done it with CM Punk before and stuff like that. In a way, I think it's probably good that they haven't always done it the same way. So as much as we are the smart fans and their main demographic is guys around our age group and all that kind of stuff. If they did it like that every single time and told us someone's coming 3 months before and blah, 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 we would get to a point where we're like, yeah, this is now tired. Like, we're hearing it the same way every single time. So it kind of still makes sense that it was done the way it has been. Again, I'm not the biggest fan of it, but at the same time, I'm still just trying to make sense of why it was done. And I'm sure with the Will Ospreay announcement, I'm sure a lot of people were thinking that it was kind of like a reaction to something else, whether something WWE was doing or them not selling enough tickets to the show or whatever it was. It was kind of like this sounds maybe more desperate than it probably was, but almost like a cry for help type of situation where they're like, okay, we got to say something quick before we don't get anyone here, or, you know, before we get lost in whatever moment was going on at the time. And I think for me, this is a very similar type of thing, but trying not to tell us too much.
I think it's just different. Knowing yourself, though. And like, when they done it with CM Punk, right? AEW were hot. Like, they were hot. Yep. Like, was that 2021 or whenever?
Yeah.
Like, they were hot. People were invested and stuff. People still love AEW. I'm one of them, but they're not as hot. They're on their way back up, I would say, but they're not as hot right now. So it's like, remember when Mercedes went to New Japan? They told us way before Wrestle Kingdom that Mercedes Moné is going to be here on the 4th of January. And I just think that's the position that AEW have found themselves in this time around. Like, they could have still said doing AEW big business, blah, blah, blah. The boss is coming, or the CEO is coming, or whatever the case is. And, you know, I think we could have been looking at north of 10,000 tickets, because all of a sudden, you know, people can make, you know, WWE, once you see the face, that right now they can't use their face. Once you see the face, WWE fans will be like, yo, Sasha Banks or whatever the case is.
They're not treated to anything
else. And people can start filling the arena. It's just like, I'm happy for her. I'm happy that this is, you know, the level of rollout she's getting. I just think that if they're not in the position as they were with Punk to kind of go quietly with it. They should have made a song and dance about this. And then the surprise on the night, you know, they let her open the show, give a 20-minute promo, whatever. Then the surprise on the night could have been Mox on someone like, sorry, I'll say Mox. Okada in the main event.
That
could have been the surprise. Will Ospreay showing up in the main event. That could have been the surprise. It's all still big business, right? Like, by then, you've already got 15,000, 10,000 in the arena. So,
yeah,
I just don't know.
You mentioned, you know, Mercedes comes out and does a 20-minute promo. But if it was a case where they've already mentioned who's coming out, that she's coming out on this date, blah, blah, blah. Because my question was going to be, what does she do on this night? What does she do? Because my thinking is that if they mention it beforehand, with however many weeks are left, they could have built this to a match with someone or whatever else. Like, is that then a missed opportunity? What do you think, Gerard? Do you think that's then a missed opportunity for her not to have a match, but then do a promo where she's probably going to get interrupted by someone that we don't necessarily care about and it feel underwhelming? That's just my fear.
Well, I don't think it's a missed opportunity in that regard. Here's the thing. If she's signing a contract to be with AEW for however long, because she's in the States, we know we'll get to see her again regularly. So she doesn't have to come out and wrestle night one. I think what she hasn't done that we haven't heard is we haven't heard her talk for real. Everything has been, you know, like when what she said at Wrestle Kingdom wasn't much. She came in, did a move that people thought, okay, she botched, and then she said, I want the title. We don't know why she left. We don't know what she's here to accomplish. She hasn't done any interviews. So give her a live mic. Let her cook. Because you talk about things we haven't seen. This has been her core audience. They haven't seen it. They haven't heard from her. They're going to want to hear something, you know? So I think if they had said it was her and said she was going to have a live mic, people want to see that. People want to be there for that. This group of fans absolutely does. So I don't think that they need to have her wrestle in a first match. If she sat up and talked for 10 minutes, we'd be fine with that because she hasn't talked in almost 2 years. So, yeah, please talk to us. Let us hear what took so long to get to this particular space. And most importantly, what you want to accomplish, because that's the next big question. You know, we think, okay, the win for her is to come in and to be on top of the women's division. What if she doesn't want that? What if she wants something else? What if she wants something bigger? I want to hear her talk.
All I know is she can't come and start talking rough about the WWE women's division.
Oh, no.
Where she's coming into, she has to be the savior. So
yes, yes.
Yeah.
The best thing for her to do would not be mention WWE at all.
Please, please do not.
Especially now. And I think, you know, we've been talking about strategies. When AEW started, and even quite frankly, up until the top of this year, they had been using WWE, you know, invoking the name of WWE one way or the other. They never anticipated Vince McMahon leaving. They never anticipated the company getting red hot. So now is not the time to mention WWE. Now is the time to talk about how great the women's division is, how much you want to accomplish around the world, talk about dream matches you want to have, all of those things. Don't talk about WWE.
Please, that would just be the worst thing to do, especially in this position. As we've said, you know, WWE is on this hot streak that is just, it can't be touched. And then as well, on top of that, it's on the road to WrestleMania as well, the biggest show.
Right.
Yeah, it would just be ridiculous. Speaking of what Mercedes could say, it's going to be very interesting to see what type of attitude she comes in with. Does she come in as a savior in the sense that, you know, she wants to come and help everyone and, you know, all that kind of stuff and build everyone up and all this kind of good stuff? Or does she come in as an anti-hero in the sense where she wants to, you know, she comes in as a savior, but then in a very cocky, egotistical, well, I'm the best female wrestler in the world, so you're going to, you know, you'll need me and all this kind of stuff, and I'm the best here and I'm going to take the title from whoever, and all of that. It's going to be very interesting. What do you think would be the best way to play it?
I would like something like that. So that was kind of my, I remember when Bobby Roode made his NXT debut. And he came in like he was some businessman. He said something akin to, I'm going to put executives in the front row and this, that, and the other. And like, we know, obviously, with Mercedes coming in, if this isn't the catalyst to make a change to this division, then God knows what will be. So I wouldn't mind taking the approach like, yes, the CEO has arrived and she's almost the face of what will be an uplift or a change in fortune for the women's division. And she's doing things like, I don't want to say it, like, it's almost Kiana James-ish. Like, like, you know what she does in NXT? Like, she's just she's not doing business, but she's acting like she's doing something along those lines. I don't think it needs to get overly cartoony. She's come to somewhere where it's very much pro wrestling and that, but I'm just looking at what the attention that the likes of Toni Storm has garnered with just doing a bit of character stuff alongside being a terrific wrestler, and where she's already a CEO and all of this kind of stuff, playing into it a bit and being this face of the change. So when people start saying that, you know, the women's division in AEW has improved, you can now attribute it to when the boss came in and cleaned up this and that and all of that kind of stuff. So something that, you know, tethers the line, doesn't get too cartoony with it, but still shows her skills and shows her having an impact throughout the division, I think could be really good.
I think, you know, that's the worry for me as well, is just this whole thing of we've seen a couple of different ladies who have come in and we've expected them to kind of make some kind of change, whether that be just based on the eyes that are on the product and then the management be like, all right, we need to do something different because so-and-so's here and blah, blah, blah. Like, we can go back to even Jade when she was on a hot streak and all the rest of it. We're like, right, they have to do something with this division. They have to do something more with her. They have to give her stronger opponents. They have to put her in the women's title picture, all that kind of stuff. Didn't happen. Then we see Saraya comes in. Saraya, with all this wealth of knowledge that she has, not just in the ring, but outside of the ring, booking, stuff like that, being back, you know, having the background position that she had when she was injured in WWE, all that kind of thing. And even she came out and proclaimed that she was going to make a difference. But yet she's getting slapped by Ruby Soho. Like, what happened? Yeah. Britt Baker's kind of done that very similar thing as well, where she's kind of felt as though she had to save the division and help everyone and all this kind of stuff. Where's Britt Baker now? Well, she's at the Super Bowl with Mercedes Moné and Naomi and Bayley. But anyway, you know, it's that's for me is the only worry. And I have no issue with Mercedes being in AEW. We've kind of wanted that, waited for it. But with the state of the women's division, it's kind of like, all right, will this actually change this now for the better? There's a little bit of a small bit of encouragement I have because of what Deonna Purrazzo's come in, and I didn't think she needed to go to AEW, but what she's done has been as good as it could have possibly been. You know, with Toni Storm and all the rest of it, it's worked out nicely. That's a little bit of encouragement that I feel in terms of when Mercedes comes in, but there's a lot more resting on this than there could ever possibly have been with Deonna Purrazzo. So yeah, it's intriguing, it's interesting. Going back a little bit, another reason why I think they didn't necessarily say her name is because, as you said already, Revolution has to happen first as well. I think it may have taken all the attention away from Revolution itself to a degree, instead of it being, you know, it would be more about big business than it would, I think, about Revolution. I don't know if that might be a
well thing. I mean, Revolution is pretty much already sold out, so if they're doing anything for Revolution, it would be just, you know, trying to get pay-per-view eyes on there, which wouldn't be hard to do. I think they have the ability to do multiple things at one time in terms of promoting both of these products. In terms of how Mercedes should come in, one of the things I was trying to figure out is, what does AEW need right now? Do they need another monster heel, or do they need this great, you know, face that can come in? Because right now I can't think of kind of who the top female baby face is in the company right now. Who's like, I mean, Willow is well loved, you know. Chris Statlander isn't what she was in terms of status relative to the TBS title, which she was holding it. I cannot think of who the top baby face female is now in terms of, you know, top heels. Obviously it's Toni Storm. You know, and then the things that are going on with maybe Julia Hart, which that seems like that's been cooling down as well. So the question is, what does AEW really need? And it feels like, because I'm of the mindset that Mercedes seems to be more comfortable as a heel.
Yep.
Though I think she probably needs to come in as the baby face, you know, who does what she normally does. Come in as a baby face and then turn heel. I don't know. I do want this to work for everybody involved. I really, really do. And hopefully, you know, because what AEW has now more than any other time is they have probably the strongest set of women, roster of women that they've had in their entire tenure. You know, if you think about the experience factor that they have with a Taya Valkyrie and a Deonna Purrazzo and a Ruby Soho, and now Serena Deeb is back, you know, and so they've got some great women, Toni Storm, and they've got Saraya, and they've got a great core of women, and then you've got a nice core of younger people who have not been wrestling as long, who are in, whether that is you know, the newly signed Queen Aminata, you know, what's going on with Willow, what's her name, there's a bunch of people is what I'm saying, and so I think they have depth to the women's division that could carry this stuff. It's just how they use it,
how they use it. That's the problem. Speaking of Revolution, the one thing that we do know finally is that we are having a I was gonna say a triple threat, but that's a WWE term, isn't it? A three-way match between Hangman Adam Page, Swerve Strickland, and the AEW champion Samoa Joe. Of course, the way we got here, both Swerve and Hangman were both unbeaten after four matches since the start of 2024. They both faced off each other to deem the number one contender. It went down to a time limit draw. I remember a certain guy mentioning something like that and saying that might happen.
He said it to a T.
I think his name's Mex. I think they call him something like that. I think I know him. And now we have you know, this three-way match. I will come to the guy who made the prediction and say, mate, when it happened, apart from you thinking, yeah, I was right again. In terms of the detail of when it hit that time limit draw, especially 1 second ago, it was just about to count three, and then Swerve does the face thing and says, 5 more minutes. Hangman does the heel thing and says, not on your life. How did you feel about that part, Mystic Mex?
Honestly, the minute, like, what did I tell you guys? If they open the show with this match, we're going to a time limit draw, and that was it. So in that sense, it kind of took me out of it because I felt like I knew what the result was going to be anyway.
Right.
Tremendous match, like brilliant. Like, you feel like it's you've always seen it all with these two, and they just pull out something different. And then the little tweak of Hangman playing the heel and Swerve playing the face in this match was really cool. And then doing the face thing, like you said, requesting 5 more minutes. Hangman saying, no, like, you had to beat me to get your opportunity. The only kind of downside I had on this was when Tony Schiavone stood up and was like, hold on. I feel like they set up us, the audience, for like, no, they're gonna go five more minutes. And Hangman's face was brilliant. It was just selling it like no, this isn't fair, sort of thing. And then obviously Tony just announced the triple threat, or the three-way that we all thought would probably happen anyway. So that's what we've got for the pay-per-view. Listen, like, I am enjoying Samoa Joe as champion. I kind of feel he's being hard done by, if he's only going to be like one title defense and he's going to go into Revolution and drop it to, you know, we're guessing Swerve. Although we think, the time is right. The time has been right for Swerve to ascend to this position and become AEW world champion. So it's harsh on Samoa Joe, but I don't think Samoa Joe was really the plan. I think a lot of what I heard was that because of his heroics against Punk at All In and stuff, and his great run with the TNT and the TV title, this was almost like a reward situation for him. And I guess people becoming tiresome with the MJF stuff as well. Short run it is, let's get the title on Swerve, because I'll say it again, I can't help but think Will Ospreay is carrying that title in London come August. So let's give Swerve what will be, you know, the best part of a 5-month, 6-month-ish kind of run. He's a face now, so it might be hard for, you know, it's sometimes hard to stick with face champions. You don't want to overdo it with their runs as well. Sometimes for them, it's better in the chase. So we'll see how Swerve does for 5-6 months, because I think it's almost inevitable Will wins in London. Swerve getting this opportunity. The only other thing I'm kind of thinking now as well, which is a bummer, but it is what it is. I'm guessing Sting will main event that Revolution show, being his.
I wouldn't be surprised.
I don't know where. Maybe you do a double main event scenario and they go on just before Sting. But yeah, you would have liked to see, you know, the show close with Swerve as champion. But yeah, it's the business, isn't it?
True. With that said, you mentioned about Swerve being a face champion, possibly ending up holding it for, you know, 5 to 6 months up until All in London. Gerard, do you think that might be too long? Could that possibly be a thing where, you know, someone else takes the title from him, and then if the inevitable is Will Ospreay in London, is it, will it actually be Swerve that will face Will Ospreay come All in London?
I do think we'll get Swerve and Ospreay in London. I don't think Swerve's going to be champion for 6 months. I think Swerve's not winning it at Revolution. I think Samoa Joe wins and he pins Hangman. And Swerve goes, wait, you didn't pin me. Mm-hmm. And Swerve gets his one-on-one match. Now, it could be as late as Double or Nothing. Or this could be the Big Business main event. And if it's Swerve versus Samoa Joe at Big Business, it's Swerve winning the title there. Because think about it, the Big Business thing, business they have to
mogul.
You see what I'm saying? It makes sense. It makes sense. Yep. So I think if they're really going to leverage Big Business, because think about what also happens too. Historically, I want to say this kindly, but historically, there have been moments in AEW that we felt should have happened. And when they didn't, and AEW realizes, oh, we didn't capitalize on it, they get it at the next possible moment. So go back a couple of years to All Out, when everybody said that Strangelove Swerve was involved. It was Swerve and Keith Lee defending against the Acclaimed, right? And the Acclaimed didn't win the tag titles. And everybody was like, oh my God, they should have won. Well, they waited till the next big event, which was just a couple of weeks later at the Arthur Ashe, you know, Grand Slam Dynamite, and they crowned them there. True. I think that's what we're going to see happen. I think Hangman gets pinned. I think, you know, obviously we get to a point where Swerve is like, no, this is not how it should go down. He goes on Dynamite. He says, I want my shot. I'm not waiting. I need it next week at Big Business. We get it at Big Business. And at Big Business, think about this. You get a massive show. You get the debut of Mercedes Moné. I don't know whether or not the Rainmaker shows up, but you end the show with a new world champion. That is Big Business, my friends.
That's going to have me busy on that night. Wow.
And it's the kind of combo they need before we go into Mania. Just think about this.
Very true.
Swerve walking into Wale Mania as the AEW champion, way bigger than him winning at Double or Nothing. So it's got to happen at Big Business.
Wow. I'm hoping that they're invested in or thinking about those details enough to make that decision.
I hope they are.
Because of that as well. That would be phenomenal. Wow. There's so much more we could say, but time has gone. You have been watching the Wrestle Extra on the WrestleMania UK YouTube channel. I don't know why I can't get my words out.
You're thinking Big Business. That's why.
Don't forget to like and subscribe. Click the notification bell to see when this guy Mex puts out all his reactions to AEW, WWE, and all things in between. You can find Mex on WrestleManiac UK on Instagram, WrestleManiac.UK on X, all the other way around. It's still the same stuff. Just find, put a dot somewhere, and you'll find him. It's fine.
Correct.
It's fine. It's fine. You can also find Mex on the Wrestling's channel. Like and subscribe on YouTube, and find out and see the Mandem when they put out their shows every week. You can also find Mex this week.
Oh, yes.
On Gorilla Position, Mex making his debut. Ooh. God, we're there speaking about debuts all day, and we didn't mention Mex's debut on Gorilla Position. But yeah, you can find him along with the rest of the guys, James and Skillet and the other guys over there on WWE GP on Instagram. I know that it's Gorilla Position on YouTube. You can also find this guy, Gerard Bonner, in every place on the planet because he is omnipresent. You can find him on his own show, The Faction Show. You can find him on WWT Live. Monday, Wednesdays, and Fridays over there as well. You can find him at the Nightmare Factory. Our Shay show is coming up very soon. He just did Evolution Pro as well, did their show. IWE, there's this new one now, Turnbuckle Champ.
Yeah.
I said, this guy's everywhere. I can't keep going because I don't know all of them. you can find him also as well on all things Bonafide as well. Make sure you check out his lit series, Legends, Icons, and Trailblazers. Highlighting all a few of our black wrestling legends, icons, and trailblazers as well on YouTube. And I believe that's on TikTok as well.
Yes.
Of course. Mm-hmm. You can find me in the one place you need to find me, which is Black Wrestling Alliance on Instagram. I too am currently doing our Icons of Black Wrestling as well series on Instagram. You can also obviously find me here and BWA Dazzle on X whenever I turn up. And sometimes when I get the chance, you can find me on WWT Live as well. Guys, that's been our show. I swear that segment gets longer and longer every time we do it.
That's a good thing.
Of course it is. We will see you again next time.